basically filled by Canadians.
And exactly who these productions hire does have an impact on the content. In a CBC article, Alex Levine, the president of the Writers Guild of Canada, says, quote, "We have 25% of the actual work for Canadian screenwriters that we had in 2014 in terms of numbers of episodes created. And that without the bill, Canadians, quote, will see a world reflected back to them that is determined by studio executives in Los Angeles and not by Canadian artists," unquote. Service productions have increased dramatically in the past 10 years, over 200%. And while the jobs are good, these American productions hog filmmaking resources to the detriment of Canadian productions. As Matt told me,
these American productions who come in under the guise of being a Canadian production are so big that they wind up absorbing all the local crew talent and all the local space. So we just shot a movie about Blackberry, and every location that we tried to shoot at, whether it was in Toronto or just outside the GTA, like diners, places that you would think would be kind of easy to go and get as a location to film, have all been kind of sucked into this American Netflix like constant production model that the prices to rent anything are like through the roof for local producers. And so it's like the side effect of opening ourselves up to American production has meant that Canadian production has been completely pushed outside of the core. Like there's no Canadian movies shooting in Toronto anymore. We've all been pushed out and we're shooting all in and around the area for way more money than it should cost us. And our crews are all working on American movies because they pay more. So this system that was meant to try to ensure and promote Canadian talent has instead just taken all of our talent, moved it onto American productions, which are disguising themselves as Canadians, while strangling the very small, low-budget Canadian stuff in a way that is so, like, the best intentions often do this. It will wind you up with a system that is doing the opposite of what you want.
And the Cavco system isn't perfect either. It's designed to make sure Canadians work on these projects, but there is fraud and abuse of the system. I've heard about it directly. When I was working as a film composer, I heard from friends and colleagues about American production companies looking for composers to sign on to a project as a key creative for a small fee, but the actual work would be done by other, presumably American, composers. Matt was also familiar with this practice.
Same thing happens with editors. Same thing happens with writers. Like, oh my God, I'll be sent scripts where they're like, okay, we want to make this as a Canadian project. You can rewrite the script. The writer's okay with you taking the writing credit on it in order to get us Cavco certification. It's like, and it's funny because it's not evil from the Americans' point of view. They're not doing anything wrong. It's like the system exists as it is. It's so much like the tax code. You know, they set up these rules that are going to make people pay their taxes, and here are the exemptions. And then you wind up creating a system where everybody just aims for the exemptions, and that's the system we're in right now.
And there are other problems of potential fraud with the CanCon system. Matt says that when the media company Vice was producing TV in Canada, they applied for and received funding from the CMF to produce 3 seasons of his show. But once the funding was provided, there was no real oversight of how that money was spent.
The CMF basically gives you money so that you can make television shows, and they kind of support whatever your distributor is also putting into the show. In that case, it was Vice. But the production company, Vice in this case, really is in control of all that money, and they can do with it what they want. And so we had a 3-season order to make Nirvana the Band the show. And when Vice closed their doors and were like, okay, we're not going to make any more shows at all, we were midway through season 2, and we said, oh, so I guess we'll just use the rest of that CMF money to finish season 3 and figure out what we'll do with it. And I'll never forget, I don't know who was in charge there at the time, but he was like, no, I think I'm going to use that money to do something else. And we were like, oh my God, what? Like, you realize that production companies and the people who actually make these deals with the CMF have control to do more or less what they want with that money. Now, again, I'm sure you'll never get anybody to admit that, right? I mean, that's a pretty controversial thing that I've just said, but I mean, I witnessed it happen. Like, we didn't get that money to make our 3rd season, and there was a huge CMF drawdown for those episodes. like a huge amount of money that where it is now, who knows, who cares, right?
I reached out to Vice for comment, but had not heard back as of press time. I spoke with Valerie Creighton, president and CEO of the Canada Media Fund, and asked her if situations like what Matt described would be possible.
Well, if people want to lie and create fraud, they will find a way to do it. You can't prevent that from happening. We are aware of situations where creative individuals have been contracted on a particular show and the money has not been paid out from the show. But we are not the police on that. The only thing we can do if a situation like that arises is that gets flagged and then that production company is no longer eligible to come to the CMF. It's highly unlikely that would happen, but it's not impossible if documents were submitted and were fraudulent and the auditor supported that. And it's one that, you know, didn't come into our screening process. So, I mean, we don't double audit all of the 2,000 projects that come into the CMF. But, you know, we have heard of a couple of issues like that. I've heard of two, I think, in the 16 years I've been here.
There's another way that Matt said the existing film system can actually hurt the Canadian filmmakers it's supposed to be helping.
We had made a deal with Lionsgate after The Dirties came out, and Lionsgate agreed to buy the American territory on The Dirties for some million something dollars, right? That was like, oh man, amazing. And so we went to Telefilm and we're like, look, Lionsgate pre-bought our next film. We want to make it with you guys. We want to make it with Telefilm so that we can like have a slightly bigger budget. And Telefilm was like, because Lionsgate bought America, we can't finance your film. Oh God, so crazy. And then it's like, we weren't considered a Canadian movie. The Canadian Screen Awards didn't think we were a Canadian movie, all because we had financing with an American company. It's so screwed up.
And even if you do qualify for Canadian funding, as Matt's new film Blackberry does, accepting that funding can mean that you're locked into distribution requirements that hurt your chances for success and limit your options.
Canadian releases and how the cinemas work here and how they require a 90-day window before things start streaming. I mean, we're going through it right now with Blackberry, where now our movie needs to come out in Canada in April before it releases in the United States in June, simply because of the differences between our two territories and that we were forced to make this movie with a Canadian distributor. Because that's just the way the system works. Whereas if we'd been able to take this movie, say, directly to a big streamer, then we would have the entire world open to us. We'd have all these different release strategies. We could do a massive release on their platform, and that would be completely fine. And the Canadian side would be taken care of because Amazon Plus Canada, or whatever it's called, would be our Canadian distributor. These companies are not happy when they don't get the Canadian piece of distribution. It makes things very complicated, like hugely complicated for them. And it makes our films much less sellable and a lot less marketable in another weird best intentions paving the road to hell way, where by trying to keep things Canadian and by trying to have slightly restrictive rules on film financing, you wind up hobbling your Canadian filmmakers when it comes to bringing films to the international market, because every single film that has been financed by Telefilm already has the Canadian territory spoken for. Canada is already sold. So if I take a movie to Netflix, they're like, okay, is the world available? And you have to be like, well, everything except Canada. And they go, huh, okay. So we need to find a way to release this movie worldwide, but carve out Canada and not have anything to do with that country. But we also need to coordinate with your local distributor who's going to be releasing it however the hell they want. It is a massive impediment to international sales and to having Canadian content play worldwide. A massive impediment.
We could keep counting the ways in which the CanCon system that has developed over the years is imperfect, but its defenders will say that whatever its faults, the system has succeeded in doing the main thing it was created to do: ensure that CanCon gets made. Without the system, there are thousands of Canadian screen productions that would never have been produced. But is that still the case? In the age of the internet, Canadians can more easily create content without the government's help, and Canadian viewers aren't limited to a handful of TV networks. They can watch anything from anywhere at any time of day. They are no longer limited to whatever is on the airwaves. There's a whole world of content available online through platforms like YouTube, Twitch, and more. And I should probably disclose something here. I have a YouTube channel. I'm not in the partner program or anything. I only have 344 subscribers, and I do not make any money from it. Nor do I have plans to. But ever since graduating from music school in 2007, I was intrigued by the idea of using this new online platform to create content. But instead, I focused my efforts on trying to find work and build a career in film music. You couldn't make money off of YouTube at the time. But other people are making a living off of it. Thousands of Canadians are making content online without the help of Telefilm or the CMF. In the spring of last year, many YouTubers took to their platform to voice their concerns about what this bill would mean for them.
So many of us fear Bill C-11, a bill we did not ask for, do not need, and threatens the success we've already achieved.
Bill C-11 implies vague changes to these platforms to prioritize Canadian content to Canadians, but it would in turn deprioritize Canadian content to an international audience.
A big part of the concern for me, and I think a lot of people, is the people writing this law and proposing these regulations don't really understand how the internet works and how people create content on the internet.
I mean, this is simply protectionism to protect legacy media again.
I spoke with one online content creator to get a better sense of what it is he does and what this bill might mean to him.
Yeah, so I'm Mickey Lajervic. I go by Xwater Online, and I create digital gaming-related content, mostly surrounding Nintendo games and doing very high-energy and very challenging content. The strat we got rolling right now seems like it's pretty good. Yes! Hole-in-one, baby! Trick shot legend! Let's go! So, by utilizing YouTube, TikTok, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those platforms, I make a living creating content surrounding all my favorite games and finding new and interesting ways to kind of showcase them to people all over the world.
You might not consider Mickey a creator in the traditional sense, but he's certainly an entertainer. Recently, he's been averaging about 400 viewers at any given time and has approximately 1,000 subscribers paying him every month on Twitch. His YouTube channel is nearing the 10,000 subscriber mark. He's also trying new things on the platform, taking risks to find innovative ways to engage with his audience.
I spent 4 to 6 months of my surrounding stream time and weekends developing an idea that kind of was a show designed around showcasing 5 games every other week. And it's a really high production value show that ended up getting a lot of custom branding done and getting a lot of technology developed for it. So it was a massive undertaking.
Mickey and thousands of new digital creators like him have been building a whole new kind of Canadian screen entertainment industry without any involvement from the Canadian government. But C-11 could change that. If the video platforms he uses, YouTube and Amazon, are forced to pay into the CanCon system, will that help creators like him? If so, he's up for it.
If something like this is available and that's possible, I can imagine an extra investment into my content would allow me to spend a little bit more on outside help in getting YouTube videos and other things moving and running and going, and would be able to offset some of my workload outside of the streaming side of things so that I could do more in that. So if there was some sort of way for me to look for a fund or a grant or something, I wouldn't be closed off to it.
So I asked Valerie if the CMF had any plans for developing programs for online creators.
I mean, that's exactly what we're looking at. We're going to put together a small little working group consulting of individuals from those communities that are working on those platforms so that we get something right. But what we've heard from both TikTok and YouTube, that creativity is certainly not the issue from those creators. It's resources to be able to do the things and also business skills. We'll be starting in 2023. We're having the meetings in early spring, and then we'll have something formed up by way of an actual accessible program, probably by summer or maybe early fall. It'll be a small program to start, but we have money allocated for that in our 2023-2024 budget, which was just approved by our board.
She wasn't able to provide precise numbers at this point in time, but said that it would be modest to start and will depend on what the needs are. Not every digital creator in Canada finds himself playing video games. Some film themselves putting on makeup, some cook, some respond to other people's videos. Not much of it would be considered cinema, but maybe some of it will be. There is an explosion of creativity. The editing and the comedy and the graphics and the text and the collage work of online video, it may be looked down upon by some cinephiles, but hey, so was David Cronenberg. Mad may be funded by Telefilm Now, and Andrew is currently developing a TV series with Bell, but they started out online, and Andrew thinks that a better CanCon system would stop overlooking young people who create and upload popular videos.
I think there are so many popular digital creators out there that have large audiences that the Canadian media industry overlooks completely because there's just a huge disconnect, right? Like, we understand that most of the people that work in the Canadian film system are very old, right? So, you know, they're not even aware that a lot of these TikTokers or YouTubers exist, and they're making their own living. They're doing everything on their own terms by themselves, but they're not being included in the larger system in any way because of that disconnect.
Matt also feels that supporting digital creators could be a really good model.
This sounds great to me. If these people already are partnered and they have a voice and a platform and they're doing something, even with like 5,000 subscribers, this I think is a great model.
The CanCon system has its flaws, but ultimately, Matt thinks it's worth fixing.
Fundamentally, we're so lucky we have it. It's a miracle that the government is willing to parse off like $200 million a year just for filmmakers to make movies. So, of course, that's great. And yes, there's going to be successes all the time. My point is that I think we need to criticize these institutions to be better and to serve a more forward-thinking cultural mandate than a kind of conservative, let's keep what we have, let's maintain a status quo, as they have been doing more or less since the 80s, I would say. So no, I love this system in that it exists at all, but I think that there's some key changes we could make to have it do what it's saying it's going to do, which is to create and maintain a cultural identity for this country internationally.
For Andrew, that might mean a more inclusive approach to funding and production, focusing on stories of people of color.
Historically, we don't feel included in the Canadian fabric of society, right? Like, it's such a large part of the fabric of our culture that, you know, people of color make, what is it? It's like 20-some-odd% of the population are people of color. But in 20 years, it's going to be almost half of the Canadian population. If we're not being reflected on screens, like, you have to include us in this Canadian system and Canadian culture, and then we will feel, you know, galvanized to actually support the need for Canadian content.
Valerie feels that Bill C-11 will go a long way to helping make the system better.
The streamers are already here. They come into the country. They choose what they want to make. They hire primarily service producers to do their work. Generally speaking, and it changes every month, they take all of the intellectual property rights for that content because they pay for it, and they take that content. They love our country. They love our locations. They love our creative crew, our talent, you know, our directors, all the rest of it. And they make the money on that show through worldwide distribution. It's a great model, you know, and it's a fantastic model for them. And Canada certainly benefits from it. But the streamers also access Canadian resources. They access the services production tax credit. They access everything the country's got to offer. All we're saying is the streamers should keep doing what they're doing, no question. But with the rise in service production, the downward pressure on not just our broadcast system, but our whole domestic market that can't get locations, can't get crew, are we in the business in Canada of doing our own domestic storytelling or not?
When speaking at the primetime conference just before the Senate finished its final reading of Bill C-11 last month, Heritage Minister Pablo Rodriguez said,
I think that we're in a good spot and this should become reality in the next few days, if all goes well next week.
It has now been over a month since he said that, and the bill has still not received royal assent, the last step before legislation becomes law. This bill could be a turning point, a new era in the system of CanCon. In many ways, it seems to be maintaining an outdated model and system that is producing film and television that English Canadians aren't even watching. And yes, the CMF is developing new programs for online creators, but this is only after people have been doing it on their own for years already. And if we just keep doing the same thing over and over because it's worked well enough in the past, ignoring changing technologies and habits and what people actually want, well, how did that work out for BlackBerry?
That's your Canada Land for this week. You can email me. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com. I read them all. We're on Twitter @CanadaLand. Our website is canadaland.com. This episode was reported by Tristan Capicchione, who is also our audio editor and technical producer. Our managing editor is Annette Ejofor. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Sarah Larniuk, erstwhile Winnipegger and Canada Land senior producer, now freelance reporter and producer based in London, who gets to take the London Overground past the ABBA voyage nearly every day. Welcome back to Shortcuts.
Hi, Jonathan.
I'm Jonathan Goldsby. Welcome to Shortcuts, where we talk about the news. Sarah, as you very well know, we like to duly note things on this show. Today, I would like to note duly something, you know, odd and funny about the Canadian Screen Award nominations this year. Now, the Canadian Screen Awards is the big Canadian awards program for film and TV and some online media. And usually, or often, the funny thing is that they kind of nominate themselves for an award, which is to say the previous year's Canadian Screen Awards show gets nominated at the next year's Canadian Screen Awards.
Okay.
But because they actually haven't had like a live gala in a few years, that hasn't been the case. And I think they're not going to be live anymore. But anyway, after going through the 150 or so categories, what jumped out at me this year was CTV got a bunch of nominations. One was for Best National Newscast for CTV News with Lisa Laflamme. And another was for Best News Anchor National, Lisa Laflamme, for CTV National News with Lisa Laflamme. I assume she's going to win. I think there's a pretty good chance she'll win.
Boy, that would be amazing.
Okay, well, that's awkward. So then I, you know, was like, how did they still put her in? Are things mended? How did they feel about that? So I went looking at, you know, Bell Media's own press releases about the nominations and noticed that, oh, there's no mention of Lisa Laflamme there. They have a whole press release that has a full list of 2023 Canadian Screen Award nominations for Bell Media.
And it omits, like, the two biggest categories that they're nominated for.
Well, it mentions CTV National News, just takes her name out of it, but it does omit her category, the Best News Anchor National, altogether. And then I looked at their other press release about the nominations, and they said CTV News secures a total of 10 nominations. And I counted through, and it's like, okay, well, that 10 would be 11 if they encountered the Best News Anchor National. So as I suspected, we found out soon after, from reporting from the Toronto Star, from Joanna Chu, that yet she did end up submitting herself for the award.
Good. Well deserved.
And in fact, apparently, by the Star's reporting, her name had been included on the original nomination submissions. Then at some point, she was cut out altogether, after which she submitted herself for Best National Anchor and received that nomination. So that was awkward and funny, and I just kind of assume that she is going to win.
Duly noted.
Sarah, what would you like to note duly today?
I would like to note duly a very amazing hire that Carleton University has just made. They have hired Duncan McHugh into a tenure track position focused on Indigenous journalism and storytelling. And I just think that this is amazing. I've only had the pleasure of working with Duncan very briefly on his current show at CBC, Hell of a Story. But he's a delight to work with. And I mean, obviously, his reputation precedes him. Apparently, he says on Twitter that he will not be buying any tweed jackets. But, I mean, there's still time for him to change his mind on that.
Duly noted. That's Shortcuts for this week. Thanks so much for joining me, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
We are on Twitter at Canada Land. I am on Twitter kind of at Goldsby. I am on Twitter at Goldsby. I'm also kind of on Mastodon, but anyway, it was only kind of on Mastodon. You could email me at jonathan@canadaland.com. Where can people find you, Sarah?
Twitter seems like a good place to send people. I'm at Sarah Larniuk. Good luck spelling my last name.
Let me see if I can do it from memory. L-A-W-R-Y-N-U-I-K.
Nailed it.
Yay!
As always.
This episode is produced by Aviva Lissard with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
The seasons change again.